Well, hello, fellow fans, and thank you for joining us in the first episode of the newest Celtic podcast, The Trinity Timms. I'm Eric of Read Celtic. You might know me from the blogosphere. And I'm hosting this opening show, and we are The Trinity Timms, as I've said. So I'm joined here tonight by my two colleagues in Celtic cyberspace, Joe McHugh and James Forrest. Joe hosts Video Cells, and James hosts the Celtic blog. So you all know their names and their work, which therefore there needs no introduction. We're going to be covering various subjects, but before we start, I want to welcome you all to the show. So, Joe, if you want to say a few words about yourself and what you have done in Celtic cyberspace for the last decade or more, fire away.
Thank you, Eric. Very smooth introduction. Hi, Peter. I'm back on again. I run Video Celts, which is a website which is one very well-paid man recently described. It has an unhealthy obsession. Some people might call it scrutiny. I've got an unhealthy obsession with quite a few things, the SFA, BBC, etc., etc. But it's what nice to Jane? Be. Sorry?
What about Jane? Jane Lewis?
Yeah. Oh, no. Jane Lewis has been quiet recently, but she's doing the Scottish Cup draw tonight, so she might provide us with some content. But Video Cell has been running for about 15 years. Before that, I was in the nasty mainstream. I got a few nice gigs out of that. The Sunday Mirror paid for me to go all the way to Seville. That was from Sadova via Stuttgart, Celta Vigo, etc., etc., etc. I'm long out of that. You never quite recover, but I've done my best on cyberspace. Used to do Celtic youth team extensively, but they're really not worth bothering about now. And in a happy place. First Celtic writing, I reckon, was January 1988 in the Celtic View, covering the reserve team under a guy called Kevin McKenna. I think he's still around. But no, it's good to be moving on. The blog's been going well. There's been a fantastic spike in interest and some recent publicity about an unhealthy obsession. And as we evolve and move on from websites, we're on the blogs, we're on YouTube, got to be in front of people. So I'll pass it over to James for his introduction, the man in the dark.
Fire away.
Best place for me, guys. Thanks for that. my name's James Forrest. I run the Celtic blog. I've been doing that for, I think it's about 8 years now. I've been involved in Celtic cyberspace for a lot longer. I think my first piece of Celtic fan writing would have been for eTimms way back when I did a piece on David Murray's Moonbeam's idea for Ibrox when they were going to have the floating pitch in the casino and all that stuff. And I wrote one of my earliest long-form pieces called The End of Rangers in 2009, I believe. So I was 2 years in front of the story with that one. I share all Joe's crazy obsessions, and I have a few more on top of that. Less said about that for the moment.
Yeah, look, I mean, a little bit of bio on myself, obviously. I'm the newbie of the trio of the Trinity Timms. Obviously, I've only been blogging for 3 years. I would have to say that my two main influences were you two guys who got me into it. I have to thank Joe, who kind of dragged me into the same company that we all work for. I started out with a very, what would you say, low budget blog called McCutaway, the cutting edge in all things Celtic. And if anybody wonders, my title is McCutaway. If anybody ever wonders what that's about, way back in 2001, I bet on a horse called Mick McCutaway. It was going 50 to 1. I put 50 quid in it and I came out fairly flush when that horse won. So I've always used that as my gamer tag, everything like that. So that's where McCutaway came from. So if anybody's wondering where the name came from, that's where it came from. But yeah, I've been managing or looking after Read Celtic for the last 3 years. I began that with John Reid, who was a writer at the time. John had moved around a bit as well and done time on Celtic Hail 67, I think, as well at one point. He actually had the Celtic blog before you, James, I think, maybe, did he?
Yep, probably.
Yeah. So, John moved on to, I mean, he moved, I don't know whether it was Faster's Greener or what, last February of 23. And so I've been left to run the Read Celtic site since then. So, and I suppose those three guys tend to all have the same obsessions. if we're to hit the nail on the head there, we talk about very much the same things. We are not afraid to talk about what's controversial. We're not afraid to talk about our noisy neighbours. Or, you know, they're very quiet at the moment. But... so
I think Tom English is another unhealthy obsession shared between us, but he's been fairly quiet recently. I think the egg chasers are on to the autumn season, then it's the Six Nations, and then we'll be blessed by the return of Tom English to Scottish football later on in the season. How lucky are we?
No doubt that he will.
I suppose to a degree, Joe, I have Tom English to thank for getting me into Reed Celtic, because it was you noticing an article I wrote about Tom English that kind of you brought me to the attention then of wasn't Martin Crawford, and that's how I got into Reed Celtic. But I sort of share the same. Well, I suppose because I'm Irish, the whole Tom English thing is kind of it's a how would you put it? I can't figure it out. It's bizarre. Yeah, I can't figure it out. I can't figure out why he is the way he is. Why he is so anti-Celtic, and. I suppose I just put it down to the fact that, he liked the succulent lamb back in the day, I would say.
Very much.
So, a little bit of I suppose Celtic background, guys. I think all of us have been supporting the club nigh on four decades. First game, Joe.
4th of September 1971, Celtic 9, Clyde 1. I was just turned 4 in the main stand with dad, uncles, grandad, and I used to think that after that I thought that a limousine going round the pitch and a flag getting unfurled was the norm. It was for a good few years, and thankfully it's back to that. No longer a limo, but the flag is still flying high over Celtic Park, 1971.
I'm proudly so. And James, what about you, first game?
I've always been amazed at people who can name their first game. My old man would have took me to my first game, and I could not for the life of you tell you who it was against, whether we won or lost. I have no earthly idea. I know I've been going to football for more than 40 years. I know my old man took me to my first one before I was about 7 or 8. I remember the 85 title, 86 title, Love Street. I wasn't at the game that day. My old man was at the game, and I was in a butcher shop in West Muir Street when I heard we'd won the league, because the guy behind the counter was jumping about opening champagne, and none of us could believe it, because even then I knew what the computations were for that to be necessary, for that to have happened, and it just seemed highly unlikely. I was at the centenary final. And I remember the following year's final when Miller scored against what was then Rangers. And like Joe, I probably thought that the good days would last forever. And then disaster struck. And as I always say in the articles, I grew up watching two things. Tories winning elections and Rangers winning titles. 97, 98 changed the story.
Yeah, I suppose, look, I'll touch on my first game. And I think the only reason that I actually can name it and I can name the scorers is because I researched it. You know, I wouldn't have, if you'd asked me without the help of the internet, if I knew what that game was or who, you know, I probably wouldn't have figured it. But with a bit of research, my first game was St. Stephen's Day, 1983. My grandfather brought me to Parkhead to see Celtic play Dundee United. It was 1-1 draw. Brian McClure scored for Celtic in Eamon Bannon, very Irish name, scored for Dundee United. So that was my first game. And I suppose my Celtic, I have my Celtic obsession to thank my grandfather to thank for that, because he was the man who introduced me to Celtic, and he was very interested in Celtic. It's funny, in my family, my father had no interest in football. It's like it skipped every second generation in my family for some reason. My grandfather has Ireland caps. He got 3 caps for Ireland. He played for Shells and Bohemian. So very funny guy, you know, when he used to tell me his stories about Shelburne and Bohemian. He said when he was playing for Shelburne first, he didn't like them because they used an awful lot of bad language, as he used to say in his Dublin accent. And then he said, I went over to Bohemians and they were much more refined. So he enjoyed playing for Bohemians. He did get offered a contract with Arsenal, but wouldn't take it because he wouldn't uproot his family. At the time, I suppose, This was back, I think, in the 20s, probably late 20s, early 30s. They wouldn't have got much money anyway in terms of what they'd been paid as footballers back then. So, but yeah, he loved Celtic, and it was him that introduced me to Celtic. And as I said, my dad had no interest in football. So he had no interest in Celtic, God rest him. He's dead a year now. And then my son, Shane, he has no interest in Celtic either, even though I took him to all the games when he was young, bought him all the jerseys, everything. No, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, you know? So, yeah, that's my Celtic background. And like James...
Don't give up on your son yet. He might come back round to it. You can go through for
him. He's got different interests. He's into archery and all these kinds of things, you know? So... I don't know if I'll get him on the old Celtic bandwagon, but I've tried it. But it hasn't been for the want to try. But in terms of, you know, like James, I went through the 90s as well, a painful time. You know, I remember I was at a game at Celtic Park in 96 when we played Rangers in the Cup, and we beat them 2-1 that time. Malcolm Mackay and Paulo Di Canio scored. I remember the atmosphere that night. I'll never forget it because it had been so long since we'd actually, it had been a couple of years since we'd won a game against them at that stage. I was actually, I had emigrated to the States, and I was in the States when we stopped the 10, and I had no live coverage where I was in Connecticut, and I didn't even know the results until I got highlights. So because we didn't have mobile phones, we didn't have text, we didn't, you know, I didn't have the internet. I had no way of finding out if Celtic stopped the 10 until I actually got home and was able to catch the highlights on a show on American ESPN or one of those, you know. But so that was a tough time to go through that season in the States with no coverage or very little coverage. I got to see one game when we beat them 2-0 at Celtic Park in the January of 98. And I saw that down in Stamford in Connecticut in a Celtic bar down there called Kennedy's. But that was the only place you could go to see live games then. So that's a bit of my history, guys. I think our viewers have got a fair indication or idea of who we are and what we're about. That's for the people who don't know us. For the people who know our blogs, they know what they're getting. And they know what they're going to get in this podcast. So, yeah, look, we'll move on from our introduction. So I suppose what I want to talk about is our performance on Saturday against Ross County. Because to be fair, I think, you know, Saturday proved one thing. It proved that Rodgers does have pretty much a second string available to him, who can go out there and who can do a job. And they did that with bells on Saturday. I mean, he made six changes, and four of the changes that he brought in, wasn't it? Bernardo, Ida, McCowan, and who's got the other goal?
Scales.
Yeah, Scales. So four players who weren't starting against Bruges came on and all got goals. And I mean, we absolutely blitzed Ross County in the first half. And I suppose we took the foot off the gas in the second. But, I mean, what's your take on it, Joe? I mean, it really does augur well for the future, you know, that we, you know, with this kind of... It's always what Brendan Rodgers has been on about, having the depth. And, I mean, if Saturday proved anything, it proved that we do have depth now.
Oh, yeah.
Other than the left-back position, which we probably need to talk about.
Yeah. No, Last summer recruitment last year left Brendan Rodgers with his hands tied behind his back. So we finished last season basically with Ange's squad. Kuhn and Ida came in, but there was about 13 players that could be relied on at finished last season. Yeah. James Forrest, the other James Forrest, he came out of cold storage and did us a turn. But now we've genuinely got about 16, 17 players that are worthy of a starting place. We seem quite lucky in that, well, possibly apart from Lewis Palmer, they all seem to be fairly straightforward and content. They're all ambitious to play. They're all worthy of places, but there doesn't seem to be anyone with any huffs. I mean, McCowan talked about you can't have a petted lip. But we've got three very good centre-backs. We've got two good right-backs. We've got five midfielders. We've got two top strikers and three, maybe four competent wingers. Clearly, Kuhn and Maeda are more than competent, but Forrest and Yang can come on after the damage has been done and there's no real drop. So we're in a very, very strong position. and I can't remember, somebody else mentioned injuries, but we seem to be fairly injury free this season.
We are, yeah.
Yeah. Last year,
and that's something.
Yep, Carter. I think Carter Vickers was out injured 5 times last season. Hatate was out twice for lengthy spells, and various others. Alistair Johnson was missing at the start of the season. Thing, whatever's going on, I think it's all legal. But all the players seem fit and well. They seem to be well managed. We don't keep hearing about minutes and this, that, and the next thing, but there just seems to be an instinct to know when players can come in, when not. Folk try to pick holes between Kyogo and Ida. It doesn't stack up. They're both contributing. They're both very different. They're both scoring. If it's one or the other that starts against Aberdeen, so what? The other will come on after an hour, after 70 minutes. We used to be very heavily dependent on Edouard, very heavily dependent on Moussa Dembele, but if either of those strikers starts a cup final or the Dinamo Zagreb match, it's no big deal. The other will have a part to play. So we're in a very strong position. Left back seems the odd one. We've got two guys that are both out of contract at the end of this season, so that's clearly a priority for January or next summer. I would imagine nobody's talked about more than Brendan Rodgers, so it's not really much of a concern. So it's hard to think of a better time, a healthier squad, a more competitive squad, a more balanced squad. So all good, and hope that keeps up over the next couple of weeks anyway.
Yeah. And what about this, this rumour that Barca are looking to take Valle back out of his loan? They can't really break that contract, can they?
No, nobody knows. There's always speculation about loan contracts. No one knows if there's a buyback, if he's got to play so many games, if we've got to pay Barcelona if he's not playing, and all sorts of things. So Moritz Jens was in the Celtic team virtually game after game, played all 6 Champions League matches, and then come January he was moved on. So a season-long loan. Everything's open. Everything's up there in January. Hopefully Valle's here for the rest of the season. But it could be there's another left-back lined up. Barcelona might want him. Somebody in Spain might be willing to pay a transfer fee. So nobody knows. There's a guy in the Daily Mail that seems to know quite a lot. But nobody genuinely knows what's in that loan contract. So there's nothing can be said for certain now about where Valle's going to be at the beginning of February.
And James, what your thoughts on Saturday? I mean, what do you think? You echoed the sentiments like that. We've really got that sort of second string.
I would even dispute the use of that term, because I don't think there is a second string at Celtic right now. I had a bit of a flip out when I read a certain right-wing tabloid journalist's article on Sunday, where he said that we'd fielded a reserve team. It certainly was not a reserve team. When you look at the players we brought in a Portuguese under-21 international, a Scotland international, a former Scotland international, a Barcelona Academy player, and a £9 million striker. So it certainly wasn't a reserve team. I've seen strong Celtic squads before, right? But there is always 2 or 3 players that you think we can't do without these guys in the team right now. And I think you could take any 2 or 3 players out of that team and it would still function as a unit and it would still do the job. I mean, we left the best player in Scotland on the bench for the full game at the weekend and barely even missed a guy. I thought it was an amazing performance. I thought it was a testament to the squad Rodgers has built.
Yep, 100%. And I agree with what Joe says there about Ida as well. I mean, he just always seems to have a goal in him when he comes on. You know, he's, and I think he's the kind of player that if, Aberdeen are kind of a bit of rough and tumble, you know, as well, he's the kind of player who could get in about them, you know, and cause them hassle, you know, because he, I just wish that we'd see that kind of form that he has with Celtic transferring to his Ireland because we haven't seen much from him at all in the Ireland jersey, you know. But no, I mean, I agree with you there, James. It's, you know, you can't call it a second string. You just, I mean, these guys are just waiting in the wings. is probably the best way to look to come in. They're getting their chances, and they're taking their chances. And I personally think that we have a gem in Luke McGowan. You know, he's definitely one for the future, and he's definitely, you know, dare I say it, a future captain. If he follows, I mean, I saw there today, he's constantly joking about the fact that he asks Callum McGregor about 20 million questions a day. You know, so he's looking to the right guy if it, you know, when it comes to leadership. He's definitely looking to the right guy in Callum McGregor. So, and his attitude is A1.
You're both hitting on an important point about the mentality and the attitude of the players. Joe especially mentioning that nobody's complaining about being part of a rotation. Everybody is on board with it, and they know that they're not going to play every game. And I thought McCown's comments were particularly excellent. This is a switched-on guy. I mean, he's not a kid, right, this guy? He's 26. So he's probably more used to being out the team for any length of time. He's probably played every week at Dundee. He's probably played every week since he was a teenager. And it must be difficult for him to come in and be part of a squad, and he's not shown any issues about it at all. He's loving it, in fact, by the sounds of it. And I wrote a piece on this earlier about the good soldiers, and every squad needs its good soldiers. It's guys who will just come in and do a job and won't complain and won't moan and are just dependable and reliable. And McCown is all of that, but he's also an exceptional player on top of it, which is amazing.
100%. 1.6
million pound. How did we get away with that?
Yeah, and you know, like you say, his attitude is A1, but it's not only that. It's the fact that he'd contribute, the way he contributes when he comes on, what he does. I mean, he's bagged 3 goals for us already, and I mean, and he's had 10 starts. And I mean, that's, you know, he's kind of just been hovering about the periphery, like, and when he's coming in, he's taking his chance. Yeah. And he's proving his worth. It's that simple. I mean, he's given the other guys plenty of competition. At this moment in time, and I might sound a bit outlandish here, but I personally think he's doing a bit better than Arnie Engels, you know, in terms of the performances that he's putting in when he's getting the opportunity.
And I know these guys came in on transfer deadline day. It is not ideal. An ideal world, Engels and McCown would have been over in America for pre-season training.
Trusty
is doing very well for someone that started the season at Sheffield United. But there's lots more, and anyone jumping to conclusions where Engels is bonkers. I mean, his first couple of games were outstanding. Taking the responsibility to go up and take a penalty against Hearts in your home debut, at his age, the youngest player in the Celtic team, taking a penalty against Slovan Bratislava. Yep, he's having a dip. Absolutely no doubt about it. They all do. Everyone has them, but Engels is without doubt the real deal. And over the course of this season, some folk are too quick saying he's better than Matt O'Reilly. He's a different player to Matt O'Reilly, but he's quality. That's when he's been well scouted. He's had a great time at Augsburg, playing against damn good teams in the Bundesliga over at Celtic, and there'll be a little bit of adjustment. Possibly shouldn't be starting as often, but he's a real genuine asset and the type of player that we've been trying out for last season or the season before. So, it's healthy to have the debates and discussion, but it doesn't mean you're writing off or trashing anyone. Everyone in the squad just now is contributing and is well worth their place, and any of them can start at Aberdeen. Any of them can start against Dinamo Zagreb in the cup final. And think of some of the teams. What was it? 2019 League Cup final. We started with Lewis Morgan. Lewis Morgan is our forward. And then we had a 50% odds on Edward to come on for the second half. Touching wood, we'll be going into the game at Hampden in a fortnight's time in a much, much stronger position. First choice, Maeda. Sorry, first choice, Kyogo or Ida. Second choice, Kyogo or Ida. And Maeda is plan C. That's a very, very decent position to be in.
Absolutely. Yeah, but no, I agree with you on what you're saying with regards to Ingles. 100% is a great player in there. And James, you wrote on that just, was it today or yesterday? You know, you were saying that you know, if we could.
You
just
know what I hadn't realised until Joe mentioned it, that he's the youngest player in the team. I didn't think of that.
And the fact is, like, I mean, I'm probably what I was kind of referring to earlier on there and saying that McCown is doing a bit better. McCown is doing a bit better because he has that, especially when it comes to the Scottish game, he has that experience. Yeah. He's been around the block when it comes to the Scottish game. So when he comes in for a start against Scottish sides, he knows what he's up against. He's used to it. So, and I suppose that's the thing. If these guys were brought in on deadline day, then, you know, it obviously it's taken Ingles a while to bed in. He probably would have had a better opportunity if he'd been brought in earlier and got a preseason in, as we know, and we all discuss that in our blogs anyway at one point or another. But, yeah, I mean, to be fair, he there's definitely a seriously good player in there, but it's going to take time, no doubt about it. So, so look, like, that's pretty much touching on the Ross County game. Let's go back a bit and look at the game on Wednesday night. And, I mean, I'll let you start there, James. What was your overall impression of the game on Wednesday night against Club Rouge?
It was a harder game than a lot of people thought it was going to be, but at the end of the day, you're not going to get easy games in this competition. The easy games are for the other one that the other lot are playing in. All these teams deserve to be there. Even the ones who are currently sitting in no points and doing well in the Bundesliga. And yeah. Bruges, I think a lot of us might have been overconfident since we beat Leipzig, and that Bruges would just be there for the taking. I never thought so. I thought they were going to be a really difficult opponent, and they proved to be a really difficult opponent. They got on our faces for the start. They worked tirelessly for the whole game. They weren't intimidated by the crowd, although some of them were a bit gobsmacked by it when you listen to them speaking at the end. But I think that there were two or three year players who won it at their very, very best. And I think if they would have been, that would have made the difference.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think as well, you know, we were left exposed on Taylor's side a lot of times in that first half anyway, especially. The left flank was left wide open. It was where Bruges' attacks were coming from the whole time. And I suppose Taylor was trying to do the inverted full back in. That was opening up the space, and they were getting in and about that area. It was their most; they were getting the most joy from that area. And when Valle came on in the second half, we shut up shop on that side, and that was the difference. So that kind of leads to the question: then should Valle be starting in the Champions League games as opposed to Taylor? What do you think, Joe?
It's tricky, and it's all tied up with contracts. Taylor is very highly rated. He's a fantastic domestic player. Rodgers doesn't want to lose him, but there's something odd that he's into the final year of his contract because virtually everyone's been signed up. So I have no inside knowledge to it, but it seems strange. So Rodgers has got to keep him sweet. There's some carrot and stick. Here's Champions League football, Greg. But if he's not going to sign up, if there's some issue, if he's got something else lined up, then got to look to the future. And equally, it'll be grateful to be playing against Ross County and other matches, but obviously coming to Celtic, the carrot is to be involved in the Champions League. So, yes. And he's worthy of his place. When he's played in the Champions League, he hasn't looked out of place. I mean, he got pitched on at half-time away to Dortmund. That was pretty rough. But away to Atalanta, he played there, and everyone did their job that night. So it's a tricky juggling act, and there's merits for both players. But Rodgers, he knows everything that's going on. He knows the dynamics, who to keep sweet. And for Dinamo Zagreb next week, again, it could be either of them. But to say, both of them out of contract at the end of this season, it's a liquid, it's an interesting situation. Nobody really knows what direction it's going in. Hopefully Rodgers is completely in control. His new football doctor is on the ball, and they've got a couple of very sound options lined up, whether it's January or summer, but ready to come straight in. But it was obvious it could have been the other way around. Valle could have started against Bruges and looked a little bit suspect, and Taylor came on and made a difference. It was the other way around, and it might have been Bruges tiring a bit or suddenly Celtic. There's various things involved, but both of them are trusted by the manager. And between the Dinamo Zagreb game and the two other Champions League matches, they'll both feature, and it's possibly the weakest area of the team, but that's probably a sign that the rest of the squad is in damn good shape.
Yeah.
Well, touching on that point that you made there about the football doctor, let's see how good a football doctor he is in this transfer window. If him being brought in is actually going to make a difference in the January transfer window, are we going to get our business done early as a result of having this guy on board? And are we going to, like, I suppose, send out the signals that we're going to do something at left back? Because I think January is the time to do it. If, like you say, because we don't know for sure what Taylor's future holds, you know, and if, as you say, he does move on at the season, we need to be talking, you know, thinking about bringing someone in, because we're not keeping Valle. So it definitely seems like the smart move in January.
I suspect the manager will already know what Taylor's doing, though, because I mean, he asked him. I think it was last month he asked him, and he said, "Look, obviously, we appreciate that you want to take your time on this, but we need to start planning."
Yeah.
So I think the conversation will already have been had.
I would think so, because you would think at this point, if he's in the last year of his contract, he'd, you know, either the club would want to be getting a new contract wrapped up, or he's just going to see it out.
I think Taylor's at the age now where he might fancy one last move to see where he can end up. Let's be honest, right? From almost the minute Taylor's been in the first team, Taylor's had to listen to stories about the next transfer window, someone will be coming in to replace you. And although I spoke to him at the end of last season about this, and he was very, very self-assured and stuff and very confident, and that he would see off whoever came in the summer. It has to be on your mind a wee bit that it's going to be, that the speculation is going to be constant. And I think he knows now that if he signs a new deal, he could find himself being the backup, because Rodgers does want to take us to that next level and does want to fix all the problem areas in the team. And I think Taylor knows that he won't be guaranteed to be first pick next season. So if he's decided to move on, that's fair enough. He's gave us good years. He didn't hardly cost us a lot of money. So
that's as far 1.5 million for him in the back in 2019.
Huh?
1.9 million or 1.5 million we paid for him in 2019, wasn't it? Yeah. So, I mean, he was, I mean, he's definitely value for money. Not to worry about that. Okay, so look, guys, we move on. Joe, bit of insight into your tete-a-tete with our beloved chairman.
Yep. Very interesting. It's madness when you consider these couple of facts. At the 2019 AGM, a routine question was put to him, and he sort of laughed it off by telling the world and Celtic shareholders that he'd never read the five-way agreement from 2012. There was no 2020 AGM. He wasn't at the 2021 or 2022. Last year, 2023, I gave him the opportunity, mentioned it again, and bold as brass, nope, he still hasn't read the five-way agreement from 2012. Probably the most significant piece of legislation in Scottish football, certainly affects us. But lo and behold, a week past on Friday, I ask a question to the chief executive, and the chairman jumps in to tell everyone that I've got an unhealthy obsession with him and his family. So he hasn't read the five-way agreement of 2012, but he reads video celts to find out if there's anything not very complimentary being said about him. So that's a starting point. So it's very, very interesting. So you get 5 minutes a year to put questions to these people. Lowell, he's a couple of pieces with Keith Jackson here and there. Nicholson, absolutely nothing. He's been Celtic since September 2021, following the sad demise of, trying to mind his name, Mackay.
Don Mackay. Don Mackay, and it was Ian Bankier. Lowell came back for Bankier, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Nicholson's been CEO since September 2021. The only time he's been in front of the media was when Brendan Rodgers came back and he gave a few comments about the ambitions for the clubs to be world-class and everything. But it's world-class in evasion. Ask Nicholson a question and he'll bat it aside. Ask him the last academy player to start a competitive first team match. That's for Brendan Rodgers. No, it's not. It's for you, Chairman. Ask him about Brendan Rodgers' comments about John Beaton after the game at Tynecastle in March when he says he's incompetent, and he sweeps it up with general comments about looking to improve the standards of refereeing. So the AGM, it's a little bit of a circus. There's a few guys there that it's almost like a confession. They come in and tell people how uber Celtic they are, how they watched their first match in the 50s and 60s, and Celtic's given them a lifetime of joy, and God bless Brother Walfred and Fergus McCann and all the rest of it. It's not particularly serious, so it was nice. Look, there's one guy came in, give a shout out from. He's formerly known as George from the Jungle. He was in Not the View, and he had some good questions about the way the club's run. The figure might be wrong, but I think there's something like £12 million paid in corporation tax in last year, which is a hell of a lot of money. There's an awful lot of season ticket holders that pay their money, and that went directly to HMRC. So a well-run club would be investing all the money that's coming in. There's plenty of things that can be improved on, but it's just all batted aside. It's deflection. It's like watching politicians on television where they get asked a question and they bat it aside and then quickly move on to someone else asking questions. So I was pleased to ask a few questions at the AGM. You got to be on your toes. It's a pretty hostile audience. They're just there to clap and feel good and warm that things are better than they were in the 1990s. They most certainly are, but the club is not very well run. We're now, this season, competing with Bruges. That's a decent benchmark for Celtic. Outside the five rich leagues, Celtic should be up competing there. Domestic success is fantastic. We all love it. We hope there's another one coming up at Hampden a week on Sunday. Hopefully there's more. Hopefully there's a 55th title. But in the world, they don't talk about Jockstein and Celtic's nine in a row. Celtic's known for Lisbon. They're known for winning the European Cup. To a lesser extent, for reaching another final. Semi-finals against Leeds, Atletico Madrid, all these sort of things. Europe is where you're made. It's got to be the benchmark at all times. Domestics can never be taken for granted, but we've got a 125-year start on our biggest competitors. So unless you make a mess of things, we should be winning domestically. If that makes you entitled, so be it. Everyone's entitled. Hibs supporters are entitled, Dundee, Ross County supporters are entitled to see better on Saturday. The way entitled is seen as some sort of nasty word doesn't stack up. So I'm entitled to ask questions at the AGM. I'll be back at the AGM next year. And I thought it was pretty unprofessional, quite petty, quite personal for the chairman to make those comments. But that's his right. He's used to folk telling him how wonderful he is. It's only once a year that somebody might question that opinion, and we all know the issues. We all know the issues with Neil Doncaster, the SPFL. That guy's been in charge of the SPFL for 15 years. I don't see any benefit that he brings to Scottish football. No benefit.
Well, he certainly doesn't bring in decent sponsorship to the game anyway, that's for sure.
Exactly. He keeps telling everybody about how Scottish football is the most watched in Europe. Well, the television deals are miles behind comparable countries. Norway, Finland, Sweden, Austria, where football's third or fourth most popular sport, they get better deals. The sponsorship deals are a joke. There's one club doesn't have the William Hill patch on their shirt. Nothing is said about it. Neil Doncaster brings nothing to Scottish football. Ian Maxwell says nothing at the SFA. We're meant to be delighted, according to Nicholson, that Willie Collin does a half-hour set-up programme on YouTube discussing selected honest mistakes.
Very select honest mistakes.
So Brendan Rodgers is doing a fantastic job. I think we're all still somewhat of the opinion, why on earth did he come back? He's getting the European exposure and he's getting those games that he wants, but he's battling against all sorts. I mean, there's no driving force in the boardroom. There's nobody with ideas. There's nobody with ambitions. The state of the youth squad, they're doing well in the UEFA Youth League, but none of them are going to play for the Celtic first team at any meaningful level. They might get a token game here or there. That's doubtful. They said Owen Moffat, December 2021, was the last time an academy player started a competitive match. That's horrendous. And
we're now coming up, we're heading into 2025, and that's the last time that a player started for the first team, I mean, we all, I suppose, remember in the Martin O'Neill days, how many players he brought through, from the youth squad. There just doesn't seem to be any outlay there at the moment for the youth players,
They send them to this school, St Ninian's, where they're supposed to be getting the best blended setup of education and training, and then they go to play in the Lowland League, and it is clearly...
It's hammer throwing every week.
The best 16 and 17-year-olds should be playing in the Championship on loan at Partick Thistle, Queen's Park or whatever, and getting pushed upwards. Rocco Vatta played 3 consecutive seasons in the Lowland League. He came on, I think, second half for Watford at the weekend. Folk are laughing. No, he's not started the match. He's involved with the Watford first team squad. That's better than another season in the Lowland League. But they really need to find something. They've got 2 players out in Austria just now. I don't think Ben Summers or Matthew Anderson are going to feature much in the future for Celtic. Being in Austria will help their careers, hopefully somewhere else. But there's a real disconnect, and there's only so long you can keep going on about Callum McGregor and James Forrest. At some point, there's got to be others coming through. Someone's got to address it, but the current environment of the club, you look at the spreadsheets, the accounts, the money's pouring in from tickets, Adidas, the rest of it, UEFA, it's all backslapping, and congratulations. But I'll be back again at the AGM next year, and I'll probably... asking similar questions, getting similar responses, and life goes on.
Very good. But, thanks for that, Joe. But I think we all echo the same sentiment that as a club we should be like Ajax. That's the kind of level that we should be. We've all written about it at one stage or another that we should be, aspiring to be a club like Ajax, aspiring to be a club that brings players through the youth ranks like Ajax does, and aspiring to be competing like Ajax does. And I mean, we've only recently, they got to a Champions League semi-final, was it 2019? Was it, they got to the Champions League semi-final?
But there's plenty of examples. Bruges, Sporting Lisbon are looking good this season, Porto, etc. So, we're not going to be Man City, Barcelona, PSG, etc. But outside those 5 rich leagues, there's nothing really to stop Celtic being up amongst them if they get other things right. I'll pass over to James. He's been quiet for too long. I'm sure he's got a few ideas.
Yeah, fire away, James.
Well, I'm going to start with saying I was pretty pissed off with the way Joe got treated by Lol. I don't think it's a secret that Mr. Chairman threatened to sue me earlier in the season. I've spoken about that on another podcast, and I've covered the story over there. But there are people at Celtic Park who don't like being criticised. And I can understand that to an extent because it happens so seldom. Certainly there aren't a lot of people willing to stick their necks out and do it. Maybe other people are just satisfied with the way we're being run. But when we appointed Mark Law, I think there were a handful of us who said something about this isn't right. What are this guy's qualifications other than being called Law? What are his qualifications? Who made this decision? How was it arrived at? And I don't think, considering how much we paid that guy while he was here, how much, for all we know, we're still paying that guy right now, how much money he spent in the transfer market and how much of it was wisely spent, I don't think it's illegitimate to ask questions about when we realised that he wasn't getting it done, which is all Joe did at the end of the day. And I thought it was 100%, 100%. Appalling to
Ray. Yeah, I mean, I think it's clear, and it's, we've all discussed it. I mean, the guy spent 20 million in the 2023 summer window. And where's the return on that now? You know, I mean, what are we seeing? From the players that were brought in that window, the only player that's contributing on the periphery is Lewis Palma at the moment.
Mike Naraki's on the bench,
but he's not actually getting a game, you know?
The classic example, you really ought to be asking questions about Marco Tilio. He arrived at Celtic injured on a 5-year contract. He said he'd been scouted for 3 years by Celtic. He made 2 substitute appearances, totaling 28 minutes, went back to Melbourne City on loan. That loan was renewed, but he's sitting in a 5-year contract. We paid a record A-League fee. I think that was only about £1.5 or £2 million. But yeah. Marco Tilio was never suited to playing for Celtic. There was 3 wingers signed that summer, all very different. Palma, Yang and Tilio. We'll be paying for Tilio for some time. He's not part of the model. He's not going to be sold on to the EPL for profit. Questions should be asked.
Even lost example.
Who put that?
We signed Kwon from the Korean second division, right? Which is absurd, right? Absolutely absurd. But we signed Odin Tagle home when there wasn't even a manager in the building. When we didn't know who the manager was going to be, which style of football he was going to use, whether or not we get any benefit out of having this guy in the squad. And Rodgers has barely looked at the guy since he took over. I mean, that was just a colossal waste of goddamn money. And someone should have been fired for that decision alone. Signing a player when there's no manager, well, what is that? Only we could have done that. Only we could have thought that was cool. Yeah. That one drives me nuts.
I mean, it's like I said in one of my recent blogs, I mean, not only did we waste 20 million, how much have we actually paid in wages on these guys as well?
Yeah, they're all 5-year contracts. I mean, a 2 or 3 year contract's good enough for a project. Pretty quickly you'll find out if they're up to it, then give them an extended contract. But these guys, Kwon, etc., all sitting in 5-year contracts. I mean, Yuki Kobayashi, I mean, he came in January 2023. I think it was a 4-year deal. Sneaked out to a team in Portugal. I would suspect that there need to be a wages adjustment in that deal because Porto Menenze will not be paying him anything like what he's getting at Celtic. So there's lots of them. Thankfully, the success of the manager is covering up for that. I suspect it won't be repeated, but it was very costly and there's zero scrutiny internally at the club.
Yeah. Definitely. Okay, guys, we move on to our final part of the segment. And I would like to get James' opinion on our new virtual pitch offer.
I think you could take any of what Joe just said about the way we are run and use it to explain what the hell we are doing involved in something like this. You want to talk about something that there could have been very little internal scrutiny of, something that I cannot personally fathom how it was done. I looked into the company behind it. They have 3 directors. They were formed in October 2023. They've already changed their name once to eliminate an S. 2 of the guys were involved in some capacity or another with Tartan Army Inc., who were suing a friend of mine, Ian Emerson, who runs Famous Tartan Army magazine, for use of the name. I mean, how people like that get a license from Celtic to use our club logo and our club name to do something like this, I have no idea. I have no idea. I don't know whether they're friends of the man or whatever, but it defies belief It defies belief that Brendan Rodgers put his name on this. I don't know how aware he was of having done that. This could be one of those cases where it's like when a world leader sends out Christmas cards to the voters. You know, he's not signing every one of them personally. Probably doesn't know the messages in most of them. It feels like a situation like that. But
yeah,
it's ghastly. It's absolutely ghastly. I was at a political meeting like 20 years ago, post-97 election, when somebody said something about how the Tories would privatise fresh air if they thought they could quantify it somehow and meter it. And years after that, I read that people were selling bottles of air from the top of Everest. And that's what this is like. Only when you buy a bottle of air from the top of Everest, you at least get a bottle. I don't know what these guys got except a sign letter from the manager.
Yeah, I mean, look, what can you say? It's, I think it's a scam written all over it, to be honest, you know. It's just something I would never have thought that our club would associate themselves with. I mean, I've seen the club across the city get involved in all sorts of different kinds of schemes, but I don't think they've ever stooped to this level. And they've stooped to a lot of
them. They're involved in a couple of similar, well, not maybe not similar schemes, but they're involved in a lot of this trading card stuff, this NFT stuff. They signed contracts with two of them, I think. And they would have signed a contract with another one, except the SFA signed a contract. And they decided they wanted to go sign the same contract because they already had a competing contract like that again. At least one of the companies that they signed up with has already voluntarily liquidated, which is what tends to happen in this industry quite a lot. A lot of these companies appear, they put their stuff online for sale, and they talk about how it'll accumulate in value over the years. None of it ever actually has, by the way. Very few of these things have ever accumulated in value. And then once they've sold their stock, they vanish and the stock plummets. 95% of the entire industry is a scam. 95% of it. And we shouldn't be anywhere near.
It's also the
garbage.
Yeah, it's also the whole aspect of it where you pay 25 quid and you get it. You get your virtual part of the pitch for a year. So you get to rent nothing for a year. You rent nothing for a year. And then for the privilege of paying 50 quid, you rent nothing for 3 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I tell you, the Ibrox club are jealous because they never thought of this first. This is perfect for them.
I mean, ultimately, you stand at the end of the 3 year period to lose nothing but the 50 quid that you spent in the first place.
I just think that the pound that they gave to charity, if you've got that kind of money to throw around, you should send all of it to the sale of charity.
At least
then somebody at the other end of it who is deserving of that money will get it, rather than whichever leeches and parasites are actually running this.
Yeah.
So, earlier tonight, the Green Brigade announced the details from their food bank at the weekend. £21,000 raised for it. And I think, 100% of that's going to good causes. Yeah. The virtual pitch, it sums up so much about Celtic. They're a hard-nosed business when it suits them, and they're Celtic family, Celtic charity, a club like no other when it suits them. They can flip from one to the other. The pitch, and I don't know who... Somebody from that company get in to somebody at Celtic. I don't know how many people are involved in the commercial department. I think Adrian Philby left Celtic for Aston Villa at some point earlier this year. But someone has decided this is a good idea. I don't know if that someone is on a commission in their job. but it would have been went up the tree. I would think there must be a head of commercial that signed it off and thought that's a good idea. And at some point, it really ought to have passed the desk of Michael Nicholson, and he didn't have any objection to it. So it's so dubious. There's nothing stacks up.
Dubious is the right word, yeah.
When Adidas release a kit and folk are on Twitter, take my money, Mr. Celtic, all this sort of stuff. Give me five, when can I get this? There's some folk have got too much of a obsession. Oops, I've ready to mention obsession. some folk have got obsession with buying things, and no one needs a virtual patch of Celtic Park. You can buy other things from the shop. There's books, there's jerseys, there's all sorts of things. You can donate to the Celtic charity. You can donate to the Green Brigade. But the timing of this virtual pitch, it looks as if it's for the Christmas market. So for those relatives that know somebody that's mad about Celtic, they've got everything going. As James put it in his blog the other week, if you've got everything about Celtic, why not buy nothing about Celtic and have a virtual pitch? But the silence is concerning. It's not surprising. At some point, somebody should have either quietly pulled that or made some brief 20-word statement going back on it and promising to put money to good causes or whatever. But they just like to rough things out, say nothing, and hopefully the drama moves on to something else.
Yeah, it's the general MO of ignore it and it'll go away, you know? And that's exactly what they're doing in this instance. So, okay, guys, well, look, that wraps up the middle segment. Let's have a look at how things are going on over the fence, our weekly look over the fence. And I suppose, James, we start with that, I suppose, exhibition that was supposed to resemble the game called football on Sunday at McDermott Park, because it was a very, very poor imitation of a game of football, if you ask me.
Yes, I would agree. There is an episode of The Simpsons. I was trying to remember exactly which episode it was, but anyway, it begins with them going to a soccer game, and there are two guys in the commentary box. One's an American and the other is a Spaniard. And the Spaniard's getting very excited, but the only word he's saying over and over again is pass, 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 pass. And the American's sitting there saying, it's a pass, it's a pass, it's a pass. And that's how a lot of Americans and people who don't follow the game properly think that it is. They all think it's boring and unfathomably boring. They can't understand a game that can end in a 0-0 draw, for example. That's beyond their comprehension. And yeah, if all football looked like what we who sat through it watched on Sunday, no one would watch it. And the Americans and all these other crazy people would be validated in believing that it's just worthless. And I like watching some of these guys on reaction channels on YouTube, like being subjected to the greatest goals ever scored or the greatest comebacks ever. And some of them are honestly gobsmacked that the game actually has moments like that. If you would have shown them 90 minutes of that at the weekend, that's the only engagement you would ever have got from them on football ever again. It was awful. Absolutely awful. Decided by an own goal. And they had other than that, that game was ended 0-0. And they would have dropped points again. They are dire to watch. I thought that the Michael Beale team was bad. This is worse. This is what I couldn't fathom how anyone could go watch that every week. I understand why the fans cannot wait to see this guy go. I wouldn't subject myself to that every week if I was in their shoes.
What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, well, can't disagree with what James said. The comparison, it's like watching a different sport. Anyone that watched Celtic Saturday and watched them on Sunday, there's no comparison whatsoever. Their games are closer to walking football than to Champions League football. They've got nothing going for them. The thing going for them is they're playing in Scotland, and most weeks they will win. Against the 10 other opponents, they'll probably win 6 or 7, but they'll not win 10 out of 10 at any stage. There's always a Kilmarnock, an Aberdeen, a Dundee United, or Hearts. Someone will come along and be fairly competent. And if you score a goal against them, you'll take something. Apart from that Ross County game where they won 6-0, they've barely scored a goal. 3 goals away from home in 6 matches. Try to mind the goal scorers. Tom Lawrence scored against the United. I think it was Bajrami scored at Aberdeen, and Jason Holt yesterday. So They've had two of their players score away from home in the SPFL in six matches. So the relevance for us is a week on Sunday at Hampden. We really should be miles on top. It should be back towards the 4-0s and 5-0s when, I'm trying to mind, who, Graham Murty was in charge, the 4-0 semi-final, and then the 5-0 league decision.
That's the final or the semi-final where Andy Halliday lost the plot, wasn't it?
Celtic.
That's a good analogy, actually.
Those games were fantastic. They were walkovers. They were walks in the park, and it looks close to that. Referees will come into it. They can level things up, but not to the extent of the gap between the two teams. So. Yeah. They're in a very bad way. Apparently, the St. Johnstone game was a slight improvement.
That could be called a slight improvement. I suppose when we're looking at the cup final in Sunday week, I mean, my biggest worry there is the referee. And I don't know, I'm going to call it now. I'm going to say John Beaton is going to be involved in some form or another. It's either he's either going to be refing the match or he's going to be the VAR. He's going to be one or the other.
I'll be there.
If he's the VAR, Nick Walsh will be the ref, and that's my guess on it. But if Beaton is involved, I would be worried, because he has the ability, as we saw at Tynecastle last season, to completely disrupt the game. And it goes back to Joe, what you said about, you know, when you asked that question to Michael Nicholson about incompetence and so on and so forth. This guy worries me, and if he has any influence on the game, I know he'll influence it in a way that will help his favourite team.
I'll tell you what, my old man said something to me interesting the other night, and I was thinking about it, and he's right. Since Colm has took out as the head of referees and brought in this, officials must explain their decisions, and we're going to show them on YouTube and go through them one by one. Their penalty quota has gone all the way down. So I'm not as worried about the officials as I would have been.
I agree with you on that point, but I'd be more concerned about Beaton looking for a reason to get somebody off. That's where we might run into trouble then. You know, the penalty side of it is that's a non-story this season.
But that's being the next fact, isn't it? If Beaton decides to send a Celtic player off in the first 10 minutes or something, that's the X factor. I mean, how do you account for that? If he's got the slightest excuse, he will do it. If he's got the slightest excuse and the slightest justification, it will happen.
It's not the X factor.
He's disciplined in no game any recently.
It's the Yang factor. That game at Tynecastle, Yang was sent off. Every weekend, we see similar site incidents. Beaton, I think, has been involved in. He's been involved in three of the last four Glasgow derbies. He was in charge of the three each game at Ibrox. He was on VAR for the Scottish Cup final. I don't think he had a role in the game at Celtic Park where we won 2-1. That was Willie Collins' farewell on the park, and then Beaton refereed the 3-0 game. So I think he might be getting saved for January the 2nd at Ibrox. But
he'd be the on-pitch referee there. But if he's not, you know, I 100% think that he'd be the VAR for the game at Hampden.
You know, oh, but the biggest talking point. It's the only. It's not been arrogant. If you asked SPFL managers to pick 11 players from both clubs, the 11 starters would be from Celtic. The three or four subs. Probably from Celtic. I think Cherney might get in alongside Yang and Forrest as a backup winger. He wouldn't replace Nicholas Kuhn, but the other players wouldn't get near it. So that's fairly factual. Nobody could put up maybe Barry Ferguson or Chris Boyd could put up a case for two or three of them being in our team. But we, from goalkeeper Schmeichel against Butland through to Kyoko,
There's the point. You would have got almost all of them arguing that at least Butland would have got in the team at the start of the season. And I don't think any of them would have the ball to even argue that any longer.
Yeah.
No. Butland is just, like, his early form last season was good in the early part of the season. And he got a bit of a rejuvenation when Clement came in. And he had a bit of a good run there. But, I mean, he just, ever since that goal he conceded in the cup final against us, he's just been, he's been second rate, I think. You know, he hasn't been great.
From the England call up that was a certainty in the Daily Record.
$50 million price tag.
he was picking the ball out the net after 23 seconds in the game in April the 7th when Tav blasted it off Maeda. And then Ida's goal, he wasn't particularly clever at. It went down Ida's shot from about 15 yards, went close to his legs. He lost three goals that day. He lost three at Ross County the following week. He'd a bit of a purple patch early on, but it never lasted a season. There was a £30 million price tag put on him during the summer. You wouldn't get £30 million for Jordan Pickford, who is the actual England number one goalkeeper. So,
yeah.
Going into the cup final, the biggest talking point will be the officials. Player for player, defence for defence, midfield, every comparison, manager, assistant manager, coaching staff, Celtic are better. But there's something that we're all aware of, and it will be who the officials are. Other than that, it's Champions League football against walking football.
Literally, yeah. So we've decided that we're going to do a little thing called the Ibrox Twat of the Week. So, James, I'll go over to you. Who's your Ibrox Twat of the Week this week?
Well, I mean, as I've said, I think that when you've just narrowly beaten St. Johnstone, when you're hanging on your job by your fingernails and surviving week to week, you should not be comparing your team and its prospects to Manchester City coming back. January from being down in the title race and winning a treble. He's a loony. The guy's off his nut, right?
And but he wasn't when he came to Ibrox. That's what happens when you go to Ibrox. That's what happens to you.
I know how you guys feel about this. We can't nominate him every single week. Oh, we would be nominating him every single week, right? But I'm reminded of a moment in the film The People versus Larry Flynt. Well, they're all sitting, the publishers, the publication team at Hustler are all sitting around the table and they're discussing who the asshole of the week is. And Larry Flint's wife says, Jerry Falwell. And somebody says to her, but you always say Jerry Falwell. And she says, well, he's always an asshole. So that's
what I would say. I suppose that pretty
Once
much
he's valid to be entered, he should be there. He should be on the shortlist anyway.
What about you, Joe?
I'll dig a bit deeper into the past and go for Graham Souness. Towards the end of last week, I mean, he's got the same script all the time. There's absolutely nothing between the two teams. He's even been to two Glasgow derbies recently, and heads or tails, it could be anyone's game. And apparently, the only difference between the two clubs is strikers. So because we've got Kyogo and Ida that pop chances in, and they've got Dessers that pops chances over, that is the only difference between the two teams. It's nothing to do with the quality of our wingers. It's nothing to do with our five outstanding midfielders. It's nothing to do with our fairly reliable defence. It's nothing to do with our international goalkeeper. It's a current internationalist at 38 with over 100 caps and still justifying his place. All that, it's 50-50 between them. The deciding factor is simply in front of goal, where we're on a bit of a lucky streak with Kyogo and Ida that pop chances away. But as we all know, these things are cyclical. In a year's time, 2 years' time, we'll be eating humble pie and wishing that we had Hamza Igamani or whatever, who's popping goals in for fun. So my nomination is for Graham Souness. And like Mr. Clement, Souness is a constant gift. As soon as he's put on TalkSport or whatever, he's coming up with the same nonsense as Clement comes out before and after every match. So I'll pass it over to you, Eric, if you can talk.
Yeah, I'll be brief.
I think it's very hard to disagree with Joe, actually. When the same guy also says that Pep Guardiola could be the manager over there, but he cannot work with substandard players, which is what they've got.
Yeah.
We'll figure that one out.
No, I'll go a little bit different. I do definitely agree with your sentiments, Joe, on Graham Souness. He is definitely the gift that keeps on giving. But for me, it was just one I picked up today. Josh Windass, ex-Rangers, or the Ibrox side, you know. He basically said that people didn't like the winning mentality that he took from Ibrox to Wigan Athletic. He kind of upset a lot of people with his winning mentality. Now, can anybody tell me what Josh Windass won at Ibrox?
I'll tell you. There's a few transfer window trophies. There's a close season cup. And I think they were joint third at some international competition in Disneyland. So
Disneyland, yeah. They won the Mickey Mouse Cup. Literally the Mickey Mouse Cup.
Yeah. So, for me, Josh Windass
benefiting from with Josh Windass.
Yeah, Josh Windass is a winning mentality that upset a lot of people at Wigan.
It's difficult to argue with somebody who hasn't won things talking about a winning mentality. That's very hard. Very hard.
I know. But look, I think overall we have to agree on what the best nomination is, and I think I'd have to go for Joe's nomination on Graham Souness overall. And I mean, yeah, James, it's a close second with Philippe Clement, but like I said earlier on, it's like shooting fish in a barrel with Philippe Clement every week.
Clement could just win this every week. His form will be better than Celtic's over the course of the season.
Yeah. So
WWWs all the way down.
Okay, guys. Well, we've gone a little bit over time, so I suppose we'll wrap it up with our prediction for Wednesday night's game. So I'll start with you, James. What do you think? How do you think we're going to fare at Pittodrie? I suppose, first and foremost, anyway, this is make or break for Aberdeen if they want to stay in this title race. They've slipped up a lot lately in the last three games that they've played. So I think if they want to keep it alive, they have to beat us.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to go out all guns blazing, which is probably going to make for a very open game in terms of the way it'll be played. So what's your impression of the way things will happen?
Well, I wrote about, after the Celtic Park game, I wrote about how I was really impressed by the way they hung in and the way they came back. Because not a lot of teams are going to come to Celtic Park and be down like that at halftime and get something out of the game. So they deserve credit for that. But the truth is that day we could have had it well out of sight by halftime. Could have been a Ross County type scoreline. And the Cup semi-final only enhanced the view that they were only losing another goal away from the whole roof falling in that day. So I think if we score early, and I think we will score early, I think it could be a very long night for their fans. I think four sounds about right.
Okay. Well, that's you're shooting high there. Four is, I think it's going to be a bit closer. But anyway, I'll reserve my opinion to last. How about you, Joe? What do you think?
It could be four. It wouldn't be any surprise whatsoever. Celtic scored a lot of goals every game, home and away. And especially at Hampden, I think that was a very sore one. Don't think Aberdeen will recover from that quickly. I would be a little bit more conservative. I think it'll be 2-0 or 3-1. It'll be in that margin, and there'll be a scare at some point. There'll be some pressure from Aberdeen. Chinny will put the boot in and show he's a complete warrior, and a few other things that'll get the crowd going at Aberdeen, but Celtic, they've been there before. When you've been to Dortmund, painful as it was, in Atalanta, the Pittodrie's not going to terrify you. The players will know it's a pretty significant domestic match. Get the points won in that, and it gives them a fair bit of breathing space. Not that they'll be using it. Whatever the match is after that, they'll still be going for 100%. But they know it's a significant one. Again, there's nobody in the Aberdeen team that would get on the Celtic bench. So we'll be not comfortable. It'll be a toughish match. It'll be some difficult moments, but I would expect Celtic to win by two goals.
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo that sentiment. I mean, my personal view is that I would say it would be 3-1. And I base that on the fact that I think that Aberdeen are going to come out all guns blazing in the first 10-15. They will probably score a goal before us. And then they'll just end up with spent force after about a half an hour. They'll have, you know, pushed it really hard, and they'll start falling back then, because they'll be a spent force. And I think then Celtic will start coming onto them. We'll start attacking them, and we'll start picking them off, and we'll probably easily score three goals against them. So I personally think, you know, 3-1 is probably an accurate enough prediction. I think that we will get in around that. If not 3-1, maybe 2-0, like Joe said. I'm not saying 4-0. I'm not saying 4-0. I think it'd be brilliant. It'd be brilliant, don't get me wrong. But I think Aberdeen have to go for this one. So the crowd will be behind them. And like, to be fair, they always get a good atmosphere at Pittodrie. We saw that against the Ibrox side a few weeks back. I mean, the crowd was electric there. You know, so they will definitely raise the players, and they'll get behind them. And I think they'll run out of steam, though. Ultimately, I think that's what will happen. They'll come out all guns blazing, and they'll run out of steam. So
that's it for
today. None of us are tipping Aberdeen. It's a surprise on a Celtic podcast.
No. So that's a wrap for tonight, guys. For our viewers, if you would like to continue to follow us, subscribe to us and click like. We will be aiming to have our podcast out every Monday night going forward. So mostly it'll be a catch-up on the previous week's happenings on a Monday night. And if you guys get really happy with what we're doing and want to keep following us, and our following grows, then we'll maybe look to do more. And we'll look to maybe involve other people as well if people want to speak to us. So we'll call it a night for tonight, guys. And I think it's been a good first one, and long may it continue.
Yeah,
absolutely. Pleasure. Well done.
All right, guys.
Till next week. Bye.